My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
All right, marketing school listeners, this is a 20 to 30 minute segment of a full interview I've done with an amazing founder, entrepreneur, creative, visionary. You're going to get a ton of insights from this. And if you want to listen to the entire thing, go search for Leveling Up with Eric Sue. That's the entire podcast that you're going to find. So you get 20 to 30 minutes here. And if you want the whole thing, you can just search for Leveling Up with Eric Sue. And without further ado, enjoy the episode.
We went through the whole bidding process for buying the company. So I was like, what's a small thing I can do to show that I'm different than the other buyers? I'll just wear the hat 24/7 in every piece of content that I make.
How wearing the hat won me the biggest deal of my life.
Yeah. I run a business called Epic Gardening, and it's been a crazy ride of like being a blogger to being a YouTuber and then a podcaster, then like an e-com, and then kind of building a whole team around it.
So did he tell you like why the hat helped you win that deal?
I think it's because...
Kevin, how we doing?
We're doing well, man.
Thanks for doing this. Everyone, this is Kevin Espiritu. So I met Kevin in person at a investors conference, and he's got this amazing business called Epic Gardening, mm-hmm. right? And he does a whole host of things. So this is going to be a wide-ranging conversation. But Kevin, what did I miss in that intro? Please add.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I run a business called Epic Gardening, which I started, I think technically in 2013, but full-time 2016. And it's been a crazy ride of like being a blogger to being a YouTuber and then a podcaster, then like an e-com,
yeah.
and then kind of building a whole team around it and making acquisitions and all that. So that's it.
What kind of numbers can you share around the business? Like you got the YouTube, all the things, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Sure. Yeah. So on YouTube, we're somewhere around 2.8 million on our main channel. Mm-hmm. And then we have five total channels, three are over 100K.
Yeah.
One of them is like a creator that we've grown. He was actually my initial garden assistant, and we like built a whole little mini content universe for him.
Yeah.
One of them is my own story of my homestead. So there's Epic Gardening, and then I created a sub brand called Epic Homesteading because I wanted a place to kind of just like F around at my house and make whatever content I wanted, and that started to do well. And then I think on every platform besides Facebook, we are the biggest account that exclusively talks about gardening. Mm-hmm. And then business-wise, I could share some revenue stuff. Like I raised some money for the business in 2021. So before that point, the trajectory of revenue was 2016, I did $18,000 total. When I quit my job to do this, it was like 6 months of the year, I did $18,000, which I was pretty stoked about at the time. 2016. Right, yep. And then 2017 was 72. 2018 was 220. 2019 was 550. 2020 was 2.8 and 2021 was 7.3 million.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And then we raised some capital and now we've made some acquisitions. We do tens of millions a year.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. How much, I guess, why did you guys decide to raise? How much you guys raise?
We raised 17 and a half million.
Okay.
And the reason why was because in this world of like creator, operator, creator, entrepreneur, I had already figured out creating content and like building an awesome audience of people who really cared about what we were doing and it was helping their life. Mm-hmm. And then I plugged in product, not really on accident, but like without knowing how big of an opportunity it might become. Mm-hmm. And so I did that from 2019, 2020, 2021 through the pandemic. And by the time it got to 2021, I was on me and four contractors and we had done those numbers, which was like a woefully understaffed team. And I was beyond my level of operating knowledge.
Yeah.
And so bringing on some partners helped a lot.
Got it. So I'm imagining you're super profitable.
Back then? Yeah. I mean, we're not profitable now, but back then it was almost cheat code because you're not paying for paid ads, right? Mm-hmm. We were charging for shipping at the time. We don't charge as much now. And so your margins were just insane back then.
And the other thing too, I think people think raising money is bad. I don't think it's bad or good. It just is. Because I'm assuming you got to take some chips off the table too.
Took some chips off the table. Yeah, which is helpful just to allow you to focus instead of being constantly in a state of like stress panic all the time as a founder. Mm-hmm. I thought the same thing. I never thought I would raise any capital for the business because it felt like it was me, right? Like your business is your child, especially when you're a creator and you're the face of it too.
Yeah.
In our space, it just made sense to partner up.
Yeah. Okay, so the botanical
interests.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk about this deal.
Yeah, this one was crazy because the first seed pack I ever bought at a nursery, like with my brother way back when I was starting to grow, was one of their seed packs. Because it's this white packet with like hand-drawn illustrations, and it just stands out compared to the rest of the ones on the shelf. So I just picked it not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, like 12 years later, we now own Botanical Interests. It's just a crazy story. But we went out and met them, and the founder is a founder, a husband and wife founder. Mm-hmm. And the husband's like, oh, like, I know you. Like, let me grab a photo with you. Like, I've got a couple friends who are fans of your stuff. And I was like, okay, I think like we got a shot here. Like, we might be able to get this.
Yeah.
So he gave me the hat.
Yeah.
And
the same hat you're wearing
right now. Yeah, I have like 17 of these hats now, but it might have been the same hat.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking to myself, like, this is probably going to be a competitive process. Like, I know there's like 5 to 7 other people trying to purchase Botanical Interests. So, I'll just wear the hat 24/7 in every piece of content that I make until this deal is either won or lost. And I did. Like, there's you can look from like all of 2022, I'm wearing the hat and everything. Mm-hmm. I kind of still do. And then we went through the whole bidding process for buying the company. We were definitely not the highest bid, like verified fact, by like a significant amount, like a meaningful amount for the founders take home on the sale. Yeah. We were not the highest.
Yeah.
And they still went with us. Mm-hmm. And so we go out to do like the whole celebration, closing party, that sort of thing. And Curtis, who's one of the founders, he's like, you don't know how much wearing the hat made a difference.
Wow.
And I was like, I knew it.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I knew that would make the difference because I love the brand. Like, I was already a fan of the brand. Yeah. So I was like, what's a small thing I can do to show that I'm different than the other buyers who, frankly, probably would have just gutted the entire team and like done some roll up type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was also not going to do that. So I think that helped, but
how wearing a hat won me the biggest deal of my life.
No, I texted my investors after and I was like, I want more equity back. Like, give me more, you know, because we saved quite a bit of money compared to what we would have had to go up to. So,
what was the angle there? I mean, get them to integrate with you guys, like the seeds, like you guys weren't doing any seed. I don't know much about gardening, right?
So, no. So the product lines we had at the time and we still have it was raised beds. So like something, a container to grow plants in. And then we had seed starting trays. So trays to start the seeds that we weren't offering, right? And we were purchasing from a local vendor connection that I had, very small player. And we were like, well, we need to get into other categories. And seed is a fantastic category to be in. It's, you know, it's something, it's one of the few things you actually do have to purchase every year as a gardener. And not only do you have to, but you want to. Like, these catalogs sit at your doorstep in the wintertime. You're like thumbing through the catalogs, you're circling all the seeds you want, you're making lists, you're like planting spreadsheets out and all this kind of stuff. It's like the most fun activity for a gardener, but we just weren't offering the seeds. And it's a very difficult business to build from scratch in any fast way at all. Because regulatory stuff, you know, the different connections you might have to have.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we think we should try to source a business like this. So that was the basic logic.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Yeah. Are you able to share kind of what scale they were at?
They were roughly at our scale. Mm-hmm. So we were somewhere in the mid-teens of tens of millions of revenue, yeah. and they were roughly in the same yeah. spot. Their team was larger because they were literally like testing, sourcing, manufacturing, uh-huh. growing, and like creating seed packets in yep. this facility.
Got it.
But yeah, revenue-wise, we're roughly the same.
So did you structure it like, did you roll in equity or was it like upfront and earnout?
They were out. They were okay. ready to go. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
They were like ready to retire.
Oh, so it was like upfront?
Yeah. They were ready to, there was, you always do some sort of like holdback structure or something like that.
Yeah,
for the most part, they were just ready to be done. Yeah.
You still talk to them?
Sometimes. Yeah. If I have a question, like I remember asking him a couple of weeks ago about some random password that I forgot, you know, but they're friendly still.
Yeah. So did he tell you like why the hat helped you win that deal?
I think it's because, look, like if you're a founder operator and they built that company over 28 years, you know, and so your legacy is being passed on. And out of the people that were in the running to want to purchase it, obviously you have other equity, private equity companies, and you have other mm-hmm. seed companies who, does another seed company need the staff? No. And if you're a founder and you want to take care of your team, like you want to go to someone who is going to try to do right by
and they're excited.
The team. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they're into it. Yeah. I would feel the same way. Like I was like, what play would work on me? Because that's what would work on me. You know?
Yeah. That's a poker play.
Nice. Yeah.
So with private equity, I mean, with TCG, what is the expected outcome? Did they kind of outline to you, hey, like we're aiming for this? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think nothing more than like the standard return a private equity company might want, which is in like 2 to 3x range mm-hmm. is kind of what everyone underwrites, I think. Yeah.
Okay. And how did you get into gardening in the first place? Because you're 6 feet two, right?
6'3", 6'4", something like that. Yeah.
So I don't see many 6'3", 6'4" gardeners. So like, how did you get into it?
Well, there's not a lot of young gardeners in general. Now, hopefully there are more now. I got into it almost as like a desperation act to get off the computer. So I went to college. I went to University of California, Santa Barbara, got an accounting degree. I was playing online poker during that time.
Yeah.
Because I'm of the age where Chris Moneymaker won the World Series in 2004. I was about 16, 17 when that happened. And that got all of us starting to play poker.
And like, that's all we did in high school.
That's all we did, right? Yep. Yeah, because we're about the same age, right? Yep. And so it's all we did. So the second I turned 18, I put $100 on, I think it was pokerroom.net at the time, which is one of the OG sites. And I played limit poker, got decent at that. And then when No Limit came out, I played full tables. Then I played six max. Then I played heads up. Then I was like VPNing into crazy sites to like play French people because they were worse, you know?
Yeah.
And long story short, during college, I was doing well in poker, watching my friends sort of study for the accounting exams and just going, I'm making more than that now. And I never really craved to be an accountant. Mm-hmm. So after school, I played poker for a little bit, but I quit after about 6 months or so.
Yeah.
But there was just nothing there for me afterwards. I had no clue what to do next. So I did some like small little business things, but I also started playing a ton of video games. Because if you play poker on the internet, it's very similar to video games. You just don't make money if you play mm-hmm. video games unless you're really good.
Yeah.
So I got so obsessed with it that I was playing like 8 to 10 hours a day. And so I started gardening with my brother one summer just to be out of the house. Just to just have a hobby that existed.
Because I imagine you're probably on tilt like all the time.
Oh yeah. Especially if you're playing, you know, if you're playing poker and you're winning, losing, and you can't have that emotional control. Yeah. Like I broke.
You can have winner's tilt too.
Yeah. You can. You can just be like on a total high.
Yeah. Okay. So you start gardening, and then how does it start to become a thing?
So I started gardening, and at the time, the little fledgling business I had was designing and building WordPress websites for like a local dentist, a local plumber, that kind of thing. And that was going okay. Like the first client I ever had, I think I charged $800 to do a site. I didn't take any money up front. It was a guy who made like Letterman jackets in San Diego. And we got on the local news, we being my site, not, I had nothing to do with what I'm about to share, but he was just like doing drugs and not delivering the Letterman jackets. And so my website gets on this news thing and I'm like, dude, this was just a terrible experience. Like I got maybe $400 of the total 800. So I just wasn't doing that well. And I wasn't figuring stuff out. And I mean, the blog was a way of, I built the blog as a way of showing that I could build a website, right? So I'd go to like a local client and be like, look, like here's my little gardening blog. It's doing well on Google. Like I know this skill set. So it's like a digital business card.
Yep. And so what was the inflection point? When did this thing start to take off?
It took a long time because from 2013, when I registered the domain to 2016, it was never the full-time thing. I was always doing other things. And when I came out of the only real job I had as an adult, which was at Scribe Media, I was the second employee there. I learned a ton. And then I came back to Epic and 2016 was the first year I went full-time. Mm-hmm. So I think when I quit, I was probably making like $400 a month on the blog and YouTube. Yeah. I don't even think YouTube would make any money then.
So how did you know to go all in on this $400 a month thing?
Yeah, I don't think I knew or didn't know. I think I just was going to do it and was going to see if it could work. Because my logic was, if I can get it to 400, I can probably get it to 2,000 or 3,000.
Yeah.
And that's about as much as I spend. So theoretically, I could be that way forever and I'd be free, you know?
And plus you had an SEO background too and a writer background, right?
Yeah, so. Writing, SEO. Like I had the tools to build a website and market it and grow it. And then I had the interest in gardening.
Right.
You know?
Got it. And then, so one interesting, I think this kind of ties in with gardening too. We can take a little side quest here. So right now, like you're carving wood, right? So how do you happen to find all these new habits?
Like, that's like a, it's a strength and a weakness, right? Like all your great strengths become a weakness at some point. And so for me, like this insatiable curiosity about how all things work, I'll get into a little side hobby or a side quest. And then this whole carving wood thing came. One of the guys on my team, his name is Jacques. He's one of our creators. He got into it and he texted me and he was like, I just spent 4 hours carving wood. Like he made a spoon, you know?
Yeah.
And you can buy a spoon, but he made a spoon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, cool. Let me grab some of these like carving knives and this wood. I sit down with him. I spent 4 hours making a spoon. Didn't look at my phone.
Yeah.
I was just chatting, and then I left with the spoon, which was terrible spoon, but I left and I was like, I feel so good right now. Like what's going on, you know? And so to me, it's like a way to get away from the business a little bit and just like have a thing that's pointless in a way.
Yeah.
There's no point besides just doing it.
It feels meditative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like this is like your version of like walking in the woods or just sitting there and doing nothing.
Yeah. You got to have something like that, right? Because I used to think like playing video games or like watching Netflix or like going out to eat or this or that was a way to de-stress, but it's really not. Like it's still stimulation for the brain. Like you have to have a present moment activity that like generally involves your body or hands or something with no outcome.
Yeah. And plus, like, I don't know if you're this way, maybe just like a mid-30s thing now, but I get a lot of anxiety just looking at my phone. Mm-hmm. And so like if the first hour of my day is like I have 1 hour of screen time, I already feel like a complete failure.
Yeah.
And I just feel like my brain's scrambled. How are you with that?
I'm okay at it. I think because of the nature of creating on the internet and like being on YouTube, being on Instagram, being on TikTok, et cetera, part of how I built those platforms was just responding to every comment no matter what. So up until like 2019, I think I responded to every comment on every platform. So I got really used to like multi-threading.
Yeah.
And then when you played poker back in the day, like I don't know if you played online, but I would play 10, 12 tables at a time and you're making like many decisions per minute on those tables.
Yeah.
So my brain can handle it. But I think when you get to your mid-30s, just because you can't handle it doesn't mean you like should or want to.
Right.
And so I kind of feel the same way these days.
I wanted to take a second to talk about today's sponsor, Ahrefs. Ahrefs is my favorite SEO tool. In fact, we use it at my ad agency, Single Brain, for internal uses and also for clients, and we've been using it for years and years. And the cool thing is they have a great academy that you can go to if you're looking to just learn SEO. And they have a free offering if you just search for ahrefs.com/webmaster-tools. My favorite feature with Ahrefs, it's a sneaky feature here, but I'm just looking at zapier.com. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at, oh, wow, they got 10 million visits in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so compared to the previous 6 months. Well, okay, how are they doing it? I can look at their site structure. So if I click on site structure, I can see that their blog has driven the vast majority of it. And it was a plus 5 million change, right? So basically what I can do is I can look at the pages that are driving that traffic. And now I have a sense for what they're doing in terms of strategy. So I can look at competitors. I can also look at our own stuff too, to figure out how we can optimize our own website. So you can just check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools. That's completely free. Or you can go to the Ahrefs Academy. That's also free as well to learn more. And that being said, back to the video.
6 years of commenting. So I want to come over to YouTube because, again, you have a 2.8 million sub channel, 350, mm-hmm. 350.
Yeah, oh, and the other two are sub 10K. They're sort of starting out.
And you just started a new channel and then boom, I see a couple hundred thousand views on one video.
Oh, the personal channel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is this? What's like your formula? Because now it's just a formula. It's not even a secret. Like what mm-hmm. is it that works for you?
I think it's channel dependent. So like on the main channel, Epic Gardening, a lot of it is just educational how-to videos that play over many, many, many years. So like some of the early stuff still does really well. How to prune basil so it grows forever. Pruning tomatoes 101, everything you need to know, right? Like that's going to be searched for many, many years. And yeah, your ability to host, your ability to explain the information, that all helps a lot. But it's a search-based strategy, which is kind of like oldish school YouTube. The new channels, Epic Homesteading specifically, it's more of like a for the fans type channel, and it plays in recommends. It's really like I'm not titling something based on SEO. Mm-hmm. I'll title something like, I can't believe this happened, you know, and then the thumb will have like my chicken flying the coop or something like that. Yeah. So it's interesting based on what channel it is, like the strategy is different.
I think it's also a combination, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's one, you know the game of YouTube, but also there just isn't a lot of content being created around gardening, even today, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there is, but it's just a smaller space than mm-hmm. fitness or certainly food. Like I just came from this big food blog conference and it's like 97 food bloggers and like me, someone who does a Disney thing and someone who does a country thing. Like it's such a huge world, you know? Gardening's not that big.
And how does that YouTube engine help with your business? Like, what do you have a sense for how much percent it drives?
Yeah, so we try to crack this because if you could fully crack attribution, you'd probably be like the richest person on the internet, mm-hmm. right? But we know that direct attributed revenue from all the organic platforms that we have is somewhere in the 8 to 10% range. But that's like the lowest you could possibly track. It's like the one day click, 24-hour window, like all that kind of stuff. So you got to imagine if you've got direct traffic coming in from like sources that are harder to track, like where else are they going to hear about us from, you know? Right. And we don't spend a ton of money on paid ads. So it's a good chunk.
Got it. So what are the kind of distribution engines for you guys right now? YouTube, SEO?
Yeah. So the blog is really how the whole thing started. The blog is a tank now because we've grown it many, many times over the years, but we also have made a couple blog acquisitions and folded them into our blog. And then YouTube, the short form platforms, which I would consider like Instagram, TikTok, Facebook to some degree, and even YouTube Shorts, we don't use that too much. Those to me all function as like top of funnel organic reach for more organic content. Mm-hmm. So like, I kind of want you to see that stuff, go like, oh, I might want to grow some herbs or something, and then go to YouTube. And then from there, you might go, I want to grow herbs with a system that we offer, and then you might go buy it.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so it seems like you use TikTok, Instagram Reels, but how come you don't touch YouTube Shorts?
I do use it, but the way I use it right now, at least, is of the four Shorts platforms that exist, TikTok to me seems the most throwaway in the sense of like its impact is not super strong. And so I'll test every piece of short form on TikTok. If it does well there, I'll escalate it to IG where we have a more dedicated and like long-term fan base. Mm. And then I'll put it on Facebook. If those also do well, now I have three data points. This is what I call like a cross-platform banger.
Yeah.
And if I have a cross-platform banger, it'll go to YouTube because YouTube is the most precious audience that I think we have.
CPB, cross-platform
CPB
banner.
CPB strategy. Oh, yeah,
I like
you
that.
Heard it here first.
Yeah. So, okay, we can jump around here, but you just mentioned the word, the phrase blog acquisition. So can you speak more to that? Because I think a lot of people would like to learn.
Yeah, so the earliest one I did was 2017. I was writing almost exclusively about edible stuff and hydroponics. So edible gardening, hydroponics. I wanted to get into some houseplant stuff because I was starting to grow houseplants a lot at that point in time. Like there was a big houseplant craze in the mid, late 2010s.
Yeah.
And so I found this website that I was using just to research potential articles to write. And then I was like, this is a pretty decent site, but it looked old. Like it looked unmaintained. I'm talking like early 2000 style level design. So I did a Whois search on it and I did a little SEO research. It was getting like 30, 35,000 hits a month. Mm-hmm. I do a Whois search. It's some like Indian guy and he was a VC in India. Mm. I find his Twitter and I go, hey, do you own this site? And he's like, oh yeah, I actually forgot about that site. I'm like, would you ever want to sell it? And he's like, yeah, I'll sell it to you for $10 an article. Which there was 90 articles, so $900. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the
He's
math.
He's not the writer, right? It's just one of his sites.
He may have been. I have no idea, honestly.
A VC that just...
Yeah, I mean, who knows what VC meant back then? I have no idea. Yeah. But it probably just some like AdSense project that he did back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I bought it for $900. Just at $900 on the ad rev, you would earn just on display ads at a 1-to-1, like assuming no traffic mm-hmm. increase. I was like, this thing pays off in like 4 months. So it's just like an auto buy.
Yeah.
So I bought it. I'd spent like a couple days transferring all the articles over, 301 redirecting them. I think just because my domain authority was higher, the rankings were better, right? Mm-hmm. And so then we...
Oh, so you moved the articles over.
I rewrote them from scratch and just redirected the URL to URL, right?
Yeah.
And it contributed like 80, 90,000 hits a month to the blog at a higher RPM. And so it paid off in like 2 months.
You don't hear many people talking about, so you hear people buying blogs and they have the strong domain authority, they might have some articles, but buying the blog just for the content, not many people do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one that you did. It starts adding, 80, 90,000 visitors per month?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a ton, right? And it gave me an entire category within my major category of gardening of houseplants, right? Yeah. Then I could partner those with the YouTube videos that I was making at the time. And then we made a much larger blog acquisition last year mm-hmm. where I was hiring for a director of search role because I was already hands-off on the blog, but I needed someone who was really good at SEO because mm-hmm. It was such a tank for us.
Yeah.
And this guy messaged me, this guy Jason, he's like, hey, look, I'm interested in the job, but I have been building a gardening website over the last like 15 to 18 months.
Uh-huh.
And he was crushing, like just crushing traffic. And I had to make sure it was all legit and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, instead of just working here, you kind of can't be our director of SEO and be running a gardening blog that isn't ours, right?
Yeah.
So what if we purchased your blog and hired you? Mm-hmm. So we did that. And we were roughly 1-to-1 traffic. So mm-hmm. we were probably at 10 million uniques a year. He was probably at 10 million. And we just completed about 6 months ago folding those blogs together. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was it's the same thing, just at a bigger scale. So say our average position was like anywhere from like 10 to 11 across all of our keyword positions. The addition of his redirects on our higher domain authority plus the additional content itself, our average position is like 7 to 8 now.
Wow. Just so everyone knows, what Kevin's talking about, average position is average like ranking per
keyword. Yeah, search ranking position. Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
It was crazy. And then the wilder thing too is we're on, we use a ad network, like a Mediavine, we use Raptive, mm-hmm. and he was in a larger tier than we were because his traffic was like just slightly higher than ours. So by virtue of purchasing his site, our RPM almost doubled on mm-hmm. our site. So if you think about that, as far as like the payback of the acquisition, it was just crazy.
Yeah.
It was another sort of slam dunk play.
That's interesting. So why didn't he just decide to continue on his, like why did he, he didn't tap out, but why did he?
He tapped in, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So he got to realize some exit value, right? Mm-hmm. And he got equity in Epic, which mm-hmm. is great.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, we gave him some equity in Epic. Yeah. And then also, he was just never going to do the commerce piece of the business, which mm-hmm. is like 95% of our revenue. And so he's like, I'd rather be on the team that I think is going to win long term. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So how did you, whatever you can reveal here, how did you structure this room just in case someone wants to do the same thing?
I think this is where it gets the most interesting, right? Because I can't say the exact details of his particular deal, but mm-hmm. we were able to structure it in a way that was favorable for both of us. Like mm-hmm. he has a payout, but he has additional monies coming in. And then because we were employing him, we could bake some of the deal into like a salary structure as well.
Right.
But you could probably try to do like full-on seller financing for some of these if mm-hmm. a blog owner is like willing to make that bet, you know?
So you gave him an upfront. And then mm-hmm. some equity.
Yeah, upfront, some equity, salary, some over time. It was kind of a mix of all the ways that you could do it.
Is he happy?
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really happy.
That's great. This is like an acquihire. That is a slam dunk deal.
It's so, like a one-off acquihire, you know?
Yeah. How did you, and he was the only employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you, I don't want to say how you sourced this, but how did you go about finding this deal?
He came to me. Yeah, on this particular one, he came to me because I've been in SEO for such a long time mm-hmm. that we knew each other from just various circles or forums or whatever, you know?
There's only so many gardening SEOs.
There's not that many, right? Yeah. And so Epic was already a pretty sizable gardening blog at the time. And so I think he just was plugged into who was in the space.
Got it. Yeah. Where do you think SEO is going, by the way? I mean, you know, the big update this week, right? There's a ton of sites getting de-indexed.
Clapped.
Yeah.
They're getting clapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, I remember when OpenAI first came out with ChatGPT, I was like, what's your position, Jason, on using AI? And he's like, yeah, it's just not for me. And I felt the same way. I was like, I don't think it's at a point where it would even make sense to use it at all to help the writing. And we've never used it. And we also never, we didn't get hit by the helpful content update.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten hit in this. We just don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. I mean, Google's rolling out Search Generative Experience. They're doing all that kind of stuff. I don't even think they know where it's going, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, again, you guys are what, 20 million visitors per year? Or
we're probably tracking to like, the goal this year is like 40, 45.
Okay,
got it. Like 30-ish probably this past year, yeah.
Got it. And so I like that. So your site purely, there's no AI-assisted content, there's no programmatic SEO, there's none of that.
There's zero, which who knows, maybe we're leaving something on the table, but I'd rather just not take the chance.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys are averaging like around like 3.7 million visitors per month.
Yeah, seasonally curved though, because it's gardening, so it's very seasonal.
So down during winter time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how big is email for you guys? I mean, on the 3.7.
Pretty big, huge, yeah. It's, email's pretty big. My biggest mistake probably early on with the blog is I just didn't care about email because I was on YouTube and podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
So when I started doing e-com in 2019, that's when I started doing email because you're auto-capturing it from Shopify, you know?
Got it.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.